Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, Seeing Spirits, a conversation with author Katie Hopkins. Katie Hopkins' journey into the paranormal began at a young age when she first discovered her ability to see spirits. Over the years, this extraordinary gift has only grown stronger, allowing her to connect with the unseen world in ways that few can imagine. In her book, Seeing Spirits, Opening the Empathic Door, Katie takes us on a deeply personal journey, sharing how her empathic abilities have developed and recounting some of her most unforgettable experiences. So what does it mean to be an empath? How does one navigate the world with such a profound connection to the spirits around us? And what do spirits truly look like through the eyes of an empath? Today on The Grave Talks, Seeing Spirits, a conversation with author Katie Hopkins. So, Katie, thanks so much for talking with me again today. We had you on the show a while back, and our episode was What is Haunting the Horridge House? I think is the name of that one, and it turned out great. I really appreciate that. Today, we're really talking about you. And that day, when you and I were talking, you kind of just randomly threw out about a book I wrote. And I'm like, whoa, what book? Because that's really impressive to me. And so you wrote a book called Seeing Spirits, Opening the Empathic Door.
Mm-hmm.
And so today, let's just talk about you, because that's what this is. And when did you realize that you had a special ability? Because sometimes when you're kids, you don't even realize that other people aren't seeing what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, when I was about 10 years old, I came across a spirit in my neighbor's basement. At the time, I didn't realize that's what it was, but I was over there playing, and in the basement, there was a guy rocking back and forth in their chair in the basement. My neighbor, the male neighbor, had passed away not much longer before that. And I went over, we went over, played as a kid, wasn't really thinking much of it. I thought, okay, it's kind of weird, but I'm playing, I'm having fun. So I went home and I said, hey, Ma, I saw Mr., so-and-so is sitting in the basement in the chair. He was sitting there watching us. And she kind of looked at me like, well, one, your neighbor's passed away, but two, no, Katie, that's not possible.
Right.
And so that's kind of, where things started for me. In the book, you'll go through that story. Again, I kind of talked about my friend Adam Tillery last time, and that he did all the illustrations. And I did give him an example or a description of the thing that I, or the guy that I saw. And my mom then saw that, 20 some years later and said, no, Katie, that's not what your neighbor looked like. And I was like, well, then who was it?
Right.
So that's kind of, again, goes back to where I started and where I've come. I really, again, in the book, I go through my teenage years being involved in sports and different things. So I really didn't have a lot of knowledgeable interactions with spirits when I was going from 13 and on, really up to probably 18 years old. And then when I traveled to Europe, I did an internship there. I lived on an old army barracks that was used during World War II, and actually during World War II was occupied by the Nazis. And I hated going to the basement to do my laundry. I would not go down there by myself. And again, unconsciously, I think I was thinking, man, there's just something watching me. And didn't really think of the paranormal. I loved the paranormal shows that you can think of, but I didn't think a spirit, or it could have been the energy of a spirit or anything of that nature. And again, if you think of World War II energy, probably not the greatest energy around.
Right.
And then I eventually went into working at the Grout Museum when I returned from my internships, and I was the manager of the Rensselaer Russell House Museum at the Grout Museum in Waterloo. And that's really where it kicked off for me again. I started having experiences. I called in a paranormal team. That's essentially how I got involved in the paranormal. And that's kind of where, I mean, from 2012 on, it's led me to where I am today.
And there was a episode of My Ghost Story, and I watched it with you on there. And it's the, and I don't know if I'm saying it right because it's spelled so weird. The Rensselaer, how did you say that?
That's right, Rensler.
Rensselaer, because it's spelled Rensselaer. You know, it's like, I wouldn't know how to say that.
It's a
But
very British name.
there was a little girl who had died. And you went in with the team to investigate. So this might have been one of the subsequent investigations. I'm sure you've done more than one there. But you felt someone, something grab the back of your leg.
That was actually during a tour. That would have been part of the B-roll of the episode, but alluding to an actual experience that I had had. My friend Chelsea, she was the tour guide at the time there, and I was an intern actually at the time. And she took me on a tour of the house just because I was fascinated by it, and I had had my degree in history, so I was like, hey, I want to go through this house. I want to see it. So she took me through it, and as we got up to the master bedroom where Genevieve, that's the daughter, where her picture, it's her postmortem photograph, and she was 5 years old. I looked at that picture and I was like, so what happened to her, Chelsea? And that's when I felt the back of my leg, right on my calf. It was grabbed.
The post-mortem picture too, I think they showed that.
Yep, they did.
It is a very creepy photo. Some of those post-mortem pictures, they just look like someone sleeping peacefully. This was it creeped me out when I saw it. It didn't have that pleasant, like, even because some of those you don't even know they're post-mortem photos, but they were very common back then.
Yeah, they were. It was a very common Victorian custom to do that when your loved one passed away. Because that was really your final memory of them, especially when it was somebody young. And that was definitely something, along with hair wreaths and covering the mirrors because their funerals were held in their home. They didn't want to welcome the other side to stick in their homes within the mirror. So yeah, it was there was a lot of things like that during the Victorian era. That were very common that we clearly wouldn't do much of today.
When you went there to do an investigation, there was an EVP that you caught from a little girl, and now I can't remember what it was that she said, but I had just chill bumps when I heard it.
Yeah, I'll never forget what that EVP said. It said, just don't speak it.
So this is the EVP from that My Ghost Story episode.
They started asking her about her death and what happened. They got an EVP saying, just don't speak it.
Just don't speak
So let's give that a listen one more time.
Just don't speak
And it's clear as day. Clear as day. And a lot of times in EVPs, you hear one and I might hear chicken. And what it then somebody says, did you hear it? They said, get out. And I'm like, oh, they did? This one's not like that.
No, it is clear as day, and it is definitely a little girl. So we kind of believe that that could be Genevieve, because Victorian children were meant to be seen, not heard. And we were pushing her death, the cause of her death, a little bit that evening and trying to get answers. We know what happened. She fell down a cistern back in, you know, the 1860s. It would collect rainwater. Well, she fell down a cistern and she drowned. And so that's how she passed away. However, there were some different thoughts from others thinking, well, so she was just walking along and she fell, because cisterns were typically covered. And Victorian children weren't necessarily just let loose to run, you know, amok like kids are today. And so it just seemed a little taboo for the time when she passed away in 1861 for her to fall down a cistern and not be supervised. So we kind of pushed that agenda that evening and we're saying, you know, was it an accident? Was it not an accident? And we were trying to talk to Genevieve. And that's when we got that response of just don't speak it. And so we're almost wondering, well, is she telling us not to ask about it because she can't tell us about it?
Kind of seems like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really interesting.
And there was another one that you got that you just hear a piano note, one note, clear as day.
Yep.
And everybody's... looks around, was that the piano?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yep. And you can see in the video that nobody was near the piano when that played. The piano was original to the Russell family. After Genevieve passed away, about 7 years later, they did have another daughter named Lillian. And Lillian was a phenomenal musician. And so it was a baby grand piano, a Stein grand piano in their house. And it was original to the Russells. And again, with that incident, it was the team members that were in there at the time. They couldn't remember what Caroline, who would have been Rensselaer's wife, couldn't remember her maiden name, which they said, what's the grandpa's last name? Because he lived with them for quite some time. And his name, his last name was Richards. His name was William Richards. And so one of the investigators comes across the walkie, because they're walking to me saying, hey, what's the grandpa's name? We said William. And they said, no, what's the last? And we said Richards over the walkie. Right at that moment, the piano played a note, almost kind of like a, yep, that's right. You got it right.
Yeah. And with your background in history, because you are a history major, and then you know, it kind of is interesting to me because this does combine all of the things you are, paranormal investigations, history. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about that era when Genevieve lived,
yeah,
just because I love history myself, you know, it was such a different time as far mm-hmm. as how people thought about communicating with those who have passed. And mm-hmm. it seems like that was... really a thing for a long time. And then it kind of became sort of a taboo that we didn't really talk about it. And now it feels like it's making a resurgence. What do you think about that as a historian?
Yeah. So I've actually done a lot of research on the paranormal and, you know, the supernatural. And it really, you know, it's been a thing for many, many years. I mean, if you really want to go way back, you know, even in BC times, they were talking about, you know, the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. Mm-hmm. They're talking about resurrections. They're talking about, you know, the afterlife. But Queen Victoria is actually really a big part of the spiritualist movement. Of course, you can talk about the Fox sisters, you know, with raps and taps and communication. But Queen Victoria set the bar for a lot of different trends. And one of those was spiritualism. And that was because when her husband died, Prince Albert, she had a seance with a very young medium at the time. And he came in and basically started talking to her how Prince Albert talked to her. And that is kind of what gave her the push to be a big part of the, you know, spiritualism, but also to really believe in it. And I really kind of credit her for setting the bar for some of that communication and thought on the paranormal and spiritualism back in the Victorian era. Now, as far as, you know, when Genevieve passed away, that was right around the same time that Prince Albert passed away. So it was kind of, again, all in the same range and same era of time. Now, do I know if they did anything in the home as far as seances, things like that? I don't know. Could have. I'm not going to put
time,
it past
yeah.
them. And then they did have her funeral in the home as well. So Genevieve's funeral was held in the home. And along with, I believe, Caroline's funeral was held in the home. Because back then, they didn't have funeral homes and things like that. Rensselaer's, I do believe, was in one of the churches in town. But when they had Genevieve's funeral, a lot of the times the custom was to, like I had mentioned earlier, cover the mirrors. And that is because they felt like that was a portal for the spirits to grab onto and then haunt your home. They also would take the spirit out feet first, looking out, because then they couldn't look back on the home and put curses or continue to hold their spirit there.
Feet first. We'll have to always remember that. Yeah.
So they can't look back.
That's interesting to me. And then, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of feels like, you know, in the 70s, 80s, you could, you know, there's books out there on it. And, you know, I talk to people who've done paranormal investigations and have been interested in it for years and years. And there wasn't as much on it as there is now. And it seems like now it's more acceptable to talk about it. You know, it does seem like lots of people have YouTube channels on investigations. And I sometimes worry it's kind of getting sensationalized like it was in the Queen Victoria age, where people come along and take advantage of what's really happening. You know, I think there might have been legitimate conversations with Queen Victoria or Mary Todd Lincoln, but then those people see some money to be made and then they go in then they start setting it up. So, you know, that's why sometimes I have a friend who's always sending me various videos on social media. And I'm like, that could be a fake. I don't know that I believe it. And I think there's a lot of that right now. You have to really watch what you believe.
I 100% agree. Yeah, there is a lot. It's become such a fad, really, the paranormal field, that anyone and everyone can go out and say, go to a location, investigate it, and be like, I am a paranormal investigator now. Where, you know, it took time for people, you know, who have been in it for a while to get acclimated with it, but also to gain that experience and knowledge. You know, a lot of outside people be like, well, what kind of knowledge do you really need to go inside of an old house or an old asylum and sit there and ask for ghosts? Well, there is a method to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just go in and sit and do nothing. There is research that goes along with it if you really want to try to trigger activity. And that's really important, especially for me. I've always been someone to make sure that I research locations that I go to, because I want to make sure that I'm able to pick out and grab certain pieces that could potentially get us more activity. And you also have to be careful, because you never know what could attach yourself or attach to you. And I've had that happen to me when I was in my early years of investigating. And it hurts me every time I hear somebody, I went to Villisca, I'm a paranormal investigator. Nothing against Villisca. Johnny Hauser is wonderful. And I've been there, you know, a few times as well, but Villisca is a dark place. And you have to be careful going into that place as a novice investigator and not being experienced, because you just never know what's going to happen to you, and that there are really are dangers to this field.
And I do think that with this field, as in any, you have to study, learn from other people, you know, even get a mentor. Because like one thing you said, you know, I think a lot of people do, they'll go into a location and be like, who am I talking to? Mm-hmm. And that's really opening up the door for any number of things to come through.
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
You had some really good points in the book. Now, because you did bring up an attachment, and you went to investigate a place. Was it the Farrar School?
Yes. Yep. The Farrar School.
And I have been trying to do an episode with them forever. And so I want I am interested in that place because I don't know a ton about it. Sure. But you had a real intense interaction that went home with you that day.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. And I know the school actually sold not too long ago. So Jim and Nancy are no longer going to own the building anymore. So I'm not sure what the history of it or what the future holds for the school. But yeah, I went there. I've been there multiple times. This was, however, one of my first times at the school. It would have been the second investigation I ever actually had there. And it was for an event. We held a fundraiser for Tim Dwight's foundation. And so Tim Dwight was there, which was pretty cool.
He's a hockey player, correct?
Football.
Yes.
Yep. Iowa football player from the 90s. And so he was there. And then we also had a MMA fighter. His name was Eric Cook. He was there as well. We were in this janitor's closet and we were standing there, Tim Dwight standing next to me. I'm like, this is like somebody who I look up to. It was big Tim Dwight fan. And I mean, I was super young when he played, but I know who he was. I've known who he was for many years. And he's standing next to me and I am doing everything in my power to not turn around and just hit him. And I'm like, why do I want to hit Tim Dwight?
Oh my God. That would be the weirdest feeling.
It was so weird. And I could not explain it, especially at the time. Again, I had just started investigating. I had been investigating since February of that year. This was in 2012. And so, I mean, I hadn't even been in it for 4 months. And so I'm standing in this janitor's closet and I just get this crazy amount of rage coming over me. I mean, we did know that there was abuse allegedly by the janitor. We've never seen documentation. And, you know, as a historian, I'm very keen on, I need to see the documentation to say that is exactly what happened. But we have been told, I guess, you know, that there was abuse in that school and said to be done by the janitor. So we were in the janitor's closet and that was happening. And I looked at everybody and I said, guys, I got to get out of this room. Said, I don't know what's going on, but I got to get out. And we got out of the room. I had gotten calmed down. I kind of relaxed for a little bit. I actually sat there with Tim Dwight and talked to him for quite some time. Super nice guy. And we, you know, eventually moved on, investigated elsewhere. But then, you know, a few weeks have passed since the investigation. And my mom just kind of noticed that I hadn't really been myself. I was easily agitated, which I am usually a very happy person, very bubbly. And my mom's like, gosh, Katie, what is going on with you? Like, you just are on edge. You're not being very nice. And I'm like, I don't know. And she sent me to a spiritual healer because she knew about my investigating. And she had been a little skeptical or a little just kind of like, should you really be doing this kind of thing? And she said, you know what? I don't like that school you went to. You're going to go see this person who does spiritual healing. So essentially Reiki. And I said, okay. So I went. The first thing what the Reiki master told me was, she goes, when were you in this janitor's closet? And
wow.
I said, excuse me. And she goes, when were you in the janitor's closet? Cause whoever was in there has attached himself to you and he's not very nice. And I said, ah, okay. And I had not said one word to her regarding that investigation. And so that was really interesting. And I think it took about 3 hours for her to actually clear all of the energy from me. But she essentially came to the fact that this individual or this spirit connected himself to me because he saw that I basically that my light for him said empathy. And that I would maybe be able to listen to his story rather than judge him. And so that was really interesting. And I have since, and for now many years, been able to ground myself a little bit better, know really kind of how to block those certain things, so to speak. But that was probably the craziest attachment I've ever had.
What kind of techniques do you use to kind of block that, to kind of put a little bit of a wall up around you so you're not open to that?
You know, when I was younger in the field, I would get certain stones, like depending on the place we would go to. Like if it was darker and I knew that the history was not a really positive one. So like Missouri State Penitentiary, Villisca, those places, I would take black tourmaline with me and keep it in my pockets. Or I would take sage or sage spray because a lot of places don't like you burning things in or near them, which is understandable. So I would just do some things like that. Of course, I would try to picture the white light. I'm not very good at doing that. I always kind of let my subconscious down and forget about white light, to be quite honest. So I just kind of do those other things, though, of protective stones, sage, to really try to just keep my energy clear from others, and for spirits to be able to kind of coincide with my energy. The other thing, you know, that I've done is when I start feeling comfortable, I leave. I get out of the situation. One other location that we've gone to, and this is probably the most intense location, and I know that the owners want to keep the name undisclosed. So I'll just say undisclosed location, here in Iowa. It's a little north of Cedar Rapids. But my husband and I used to be able to go to this location all the time. His uncle owned it, and it's not Edinburgh Manor for those listening.
You have been there, but it's not there.
Yeah, wasn't there. It was a different location that was owned by my husband's family. And we would go there all the time. We loved to investigate the place. I had my black tourmaline in my pocket one time, and I just kind of felt a pop in near my leg. And I was like, what in the world? I reached in my pocket and my black tourmaline had been crushed.
Crushed.
Literally in pieces.
How does that happen?
No idea. We know that the spirits there, we definitely ran into some negativity there. Probably one of the most negative places I've ever been. And I've been to some pretty insane places. I mean, I've been to Missouri State Penitentiary. I've been to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. I've been to other mental institutions, and I've never had that happen to me before. And actually, if you read my book, you'll be able to read about the spirit that I think did this. He's actually on the back of the book, the drawing on the back of the book. We don't know what, it was just a random thing. We were walking through and I felt it and I looked, and it was, I just literally pulled out pieces of it from my pocket. The spirit, again, you can read about him. He's the one that is, again, on the back of the Seeing Spirits book. He's really creepy looking. And he's also, you'll know what one I'm talking about because his picture is in the book as well.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Katie Hopkins about her book, Seeing Spirits, Opening the Empathic Door. You can get the book on Amazon or wherever books are sold. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts. You can try it for 3 days free there. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America.
America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's Social Casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino. Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's Social Casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's Social Casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's Social Casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's Social Casino.